And I have often found that what's very strange is that people often say that the word of the Buddha is hard to understand. You know, you open up the suttas and say, oh, I can't understand what's going on. It's so strange. You know, all these foreign words and all this kind of strange vocabulary. Then you get kind of, you know, the translations sometimes are done by people who are very educated, like Bhikkhu Bodhi. You know about Bhikkhu Bodhi? He's one of the famous translators of the suttas. And he's a philosopher. So because he's a philosopher, the vocabulary that he uses is kind of often very elevated. You feel like you're reading kind of a philosophical you know, text or something like that. That can make it even also very difficult. So you have to have the Oxford Dictionary here, and then you have to have the suttas over there, and then you can make sense of these things. That is part of the problem. So, but actually, what I found is that the suttas are often much more direct and often very kind of straightforward, very consistent, very coherent. After a while, once you get used to the way they are, because it's also part of the problem is that it's an oral tradition. And because it is an oral tradition, it is often very repetitive and it may seem very boring, and et cetera, but once you get used to this style, and once you understand how coherent it is, how integrated everything is, it comes out very beautifully and very powerfully. Whereas if you read modern teachers, it can often be very idiosyncratic, right? Everybody has their kind of way of saying things, and you don't really know how it relates to the suttas, and it's hard to interpret and all these kind of things. So I will always recommend people to have a look at the word of the Buddha. It's often very powerful, especially when you meditate at the same time. And that's what we're going to try to do here. This is kind of the idea behind this. How is the Q&A going to happen in the evening? Are they kind of people have a chance to write down questions and things, or?
I can do that if you prefer that.
Yeah, I think if we have too much interaction, it might kind of disturb some people. Okay. So maybe if we can have some where we can write questions down, I think it might be a good idea, actually.
Okay. I'll put that on the red table, then a little bowl where you can put some, write down the questions and put into the bowl.
Yeah, correct. That's really good.
Okay, put that up in for the future, noch eine, etwas aufgestellt, wo ihr dann eure Fragen für die abendliche Frage schon aufschreiben könnt, dass ihr das.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Good. Many people here who can't speak understand English very well. You probably can't understand my question, right? Okay, good. So, what are you going to do? Are you going to try to say, give a summary at the end? Is that the idea?
That's the idea.
Okay, good. So, I should also, maybe what I should do as well is to say a little bit about how I like to run this retreat, even though I have Imla probably said quite a bit about this already. But the idea, from my point of view, is at a retreat to be really relaxed and to really enjoy being here. That's kind of the main priority. So the idea behind things like the schedule and everything like that is completely voluntary. It's up to you when you want to be, how much you want to meditate, how much you want to, if you don't like the talks I give, that's fine, don't have to come to the talks, right? It's really completely up to you. And I always follow Ajahn Brahm's example. You know about Ajahn Brahm, presumably, right? Ajahn Brahm, really. He's my teacher in Australia. And he always says there's only two compulsory things on retreat, right? Breakfast and lunch. Everything else is voluntary. So, and that is kind of a nice attitude to have because it means that you can really kind of relax and enjoy yourself. And on the first few days of a retreat, very often it takes a little time to get used to the schedule and all this kind of thing. So if you want to sleep in the morning on the first few days, or even the whole retreat for that matter, it's really up to you. So just feel what kind of feels right. You get into the right mood, you're happy, you're enjoying yourself. And when you enjoy yourself, that's usually when the meditation comes together. So tonight I was just going to talk, give a little bit of introduction to meditation practice. And then every day there's going to be a guided meditation. And the idea behind the guided meditation is to kind of just reinforce the idea of how to meditate. I won't be doing so much direct meditation practice apart from tonight. And the rest will be more sutta readings. And the way that I like to teach meditation just through the guiding itself, that's kind of the idea behind the guidance. So again, it's really up to you. If you like the guidance, that's fine. If you don't like it, that's fine as well. It's really up to you whether you want to be here or not. But that's sort of the way I like to do things. The idea with meditation practice a good place to start with that is to start with the idea of mindfulness, because mindfulness is one of those core aspects and core parts of what meditation is all about. And mindfulness is, I think, often misunderstood and exactly what it is. One of the things that you see when you start reading the word of the Buddha, I'm going to be returning to the word of the Buddha all the time as during this retreat. One of the things that you see is that any real meditation practice, it starts after mindfulness is established. Yeah, so once mindfulness is in place, that is when meditation really starts. Sometimes people think that the purpose of meditation is to establish mindfulness. But not really. If you haven't got mindfulness in the first place, you can't really do anything. You can't follow the breath, you can't do metta meditation, you can't really do any kind of object of meditation, because if you're not in the present moment, how are you going to be able to direct your mind to a meditation object? And it's virtually impossible. So the first part of meditation is always really to establish the mindfulness first of all. Then, when the mindfulness is established, which means that your mind is in the present moment, your mind has a certain degree of clarity. When that is the case, that is when it is possible to watch the breath and these kind of things. So priority is always to establish mindfulness first of all. This is kind of the first part. And then the meditation happens as a consequence. And it's important to remember that, because very often people make the mistake of going to the breath, for example, too quickly. Or they go to the loving kindness too quickly. And if you go too quickly before the meditation is established, then what happens is that you have to use force, you have to use willpower to be able to sustain the attention on that object. Yeah, it kind of makes sense, right? Because if you haven't got clarity in the present moment, your mind is kind of all over the place, how are you going to be able to hold on to the meditation object? It's impossible, yeah? And the only way you're going to do that is by a kind of grabbing hold of it, using force, using willpower. And I have been brainwashed by Ajahn Brahm. He told me, no, you cannot use willpower in meditation. That is kind of forbidden in our monastery. If you really need to chill and be relaxed, our monastery is really good for that. Recommend it. So ideally, of course, everything, meditation, becomes much easier, much more comfortable if you don't have to use too much willpower. And you can just kind of sit back, right, relax, and just breathing in, breathing out. Oh, so easy. Yeah. That's when it's kind of really, really comfortable and really nice. So because establishing mindfulness is the first priority in any kind of meditation practice, we need to know how do we actually establish that mindfulness. This is kind of the crucial issue here. To be able to grasp that, you have to kind of, as always, go back to the word of the Buddha. And there's two things that really stand out, in my opinion, about how mindfulness is established. The first one is that you have to feel present, right? You have to feel reasonably happy, reasonably content, reasonably relaxed, reasonably at ease, reasonably joyful, all of these positive emotional qualities. And once you have that, once you feel positive about things, once you feel good about things, then it's easy to be in the present moment. Because if it is pleasant to be right here, right now, you don't want to be anywhere else. You don't want to think about the past. You don't want to think about the future. You don't want to fantasize about things. Because the present moment is the pleasant moment. Yeah? Nice little catchphrase. The present moment becomes the present moment. Another one of Ajahn Brahm's coinages. I just kind of repeat everything, which is really nice. I don't want to have to just kind of and the rip-off, as Abraham's saying, so I'm fine, basically. So this is the first principle of meditation practice, is to enjoy being here, enjoy being present, enjoy what you're doing here. And once that joy is there, that happiness, or at least you're not painful or feeling negative about things, then the mind is automatically drawn to the present moment. There's nothing else you really have to do, because you're so happy being right here. So this is the first one, and when you read the suttas of the Buddha, what you find is that everywhere the Buddha says it, and when you want to read about Satipatthana practice, for example, you have to read quite broadly. It's not enough just to read the Satipatthana Sutta in isolation, because if you read a single sutta, you don't have the broad overview of what's going on. So if you want to understand Satipatthana practice, you really have to have read things like the Satipatthana Sangyutta, which is found in this book. Down here, and you have to read broadly, and when you understand things broadly, you actually have a context for understanding these things. And one of the things that you see throughout the Satipatthana Sanghita is this idea that Satipatthana is based on sila, which is morality. And that morality is the source for the feeling contented and happy in the present moment, and that then makes mindfulness possible. This is kind of this is a thing I will come back to again and again on this retreat, because it's so foundational and so important for being able to practice this path fully. So that is the first thing. The second thing, which is quite interesting also, which is an important support for meditation practice, and that is how to make a priority out of the meditation, how to make the meditation important. That right now your mind inclines towards the meditation object. And this is, I think, very much related to the other factor we find in the suttas, where the Buddha talks about the other support for Satipatthana. Practice Satipatthana is all about meditation, right? And the other support, he says, is Ujjukha Ditti. Ujjukha Ditti means straight view. So seeing things in a straight and kind of appropriate way, if you like. It's related to right view, Sammaditti on the Buddhist path, but it's a bit more basic than that. And the idea here is just to remember that when you come to meditate, when you come to practice the Buddhist path, then you are in a place where you come the closest, in my opinion, I think in the Buddha's opinion obviously as well, you come the closest to the meaning of life, right? It is when you abandon some of the craving and desire, you start to feel peaceful and content, you start to feel joy and happiness in the meditation, by sitting here, and you feel that you're moving towards the very meaning of life itself. And this is one of those things, if you have a sense that when you meditate, this is the closest you come to the answer, to the question of the meaning of life, you give it priority. It becomes really important. So if this is what it's all about, if this is the answer to the meaning of life, then everything else you do in life is to support what you're doing when you sit down on your cushion and you do your meditation practice. And what that does is you turn things around like that. Sometimes people think, yeah, when I meditate, I'm going to learn to meditate so I can support that the rest of my life, I can be more effective at work and better in my relationships and all these kind of things. So meditation has kind of the idea is to support the rest of your life, but turn it around. The rest of your life is to support meditation practice. Yeah. So your work, whatever you do at work, whatever you do in your family life, whatever relationships you have, all of that is done in such a way as to support you when you sit down in the cushion to meditate. And what that means is that when you sit down, you close your eyes, you watch your breath or whatever, it means that all of the other stuff is not interesting anymore, because its only purpose is to support what you are doing now instead of the other way around. If your meditation is to support the other stuff, it's very easy to be sidetracked and think about those things, because you're giving them priority. But if instead meditation is number one, and all of the other stuff is to support meditation, why are you going to think about the other stuff? It is there to support what you're doing now anyway. It takes away the importance in all those other activities, and it places the importance in the present moment, right now, right here with the meditation practice. This is a very nice way of thinking about it, and it kind of, when you do that, it makes this, what we're doing now, so significant and so powerful in a sense for what our life is all about. So that is, so these two things together, the idea of happiness and the idea of priority, I think are two of the kind of very supportive qualities for mindfulness to arise. So I want to talk a little bit more about the idea of happiness, how to kind of give rise to happiness in this practice. And by happiness, I don't mean just kind of some silly euphoria or something like that. I mean kind of any sense, any emotional quality which is positive, a lack of suffering, a lack of stress, a lack of all of these things. And of course, also a positive perception of the present moment at the same time. So one of the ways of one of the basic kind of things to remember. Okay, better watch this time here. One of the basic things to remember about this is to start off with to make sure that you are comfortable in your meditation. Yeah, so we have a few chairs here, which is great. Are this all the chairs that we have, Arya?
No, we've got plenty of chairs.
Okay. Okay, great. So one of the to me, a fundamental thing is to be comfortable, physically comfortable in the body for the meditation practice. Because if one of the problems is that there's a tendency for people to think that, you know, no pain, no gain, this is kind of an attitude that people have, especially in spiritual practice. If you torture the body a little bit, then kind of the mind and the spirit kind of gets purified, right? If you torture the body. I think this is one of those classical things that has always been a core part of religious and spiritual practice. Torturing the body on the one hand goes together with the purifying of the spirit on the other hand. But be careful about that, because if you experience too much pain during the meditation period, it is very hard to feel at peace and to feel relaxed and really, really enjoying what you're doing here. So to avoid that, that's why we have chairs. And I see some of you are sitting on chairs already, which is great. So please don't feel embarrassed about using chairs. There are some really good meditators around who meditate on chairs, and you get really good samadhi as a consequence. So please use the chairs that we have and don't feel that it is necessary to sit on the floor to be able to meditate properly here. What is far more important now, whether you sit on the floor or you sit on the chair or you stand on your head or you lie down or whatever you do, right? I wouldn't recommend standing on your head, please. It's too kind of tricky. Actually, there was a monk who did that once. There was a monk I know quite well. He was standing on his head. And while he was standing on his head, his meditation became really profound. And then, you know, he kind of disappeared and he kind of found himself falling over later on, kind of lying in on the floor afterwards. So he said, don't meditate while you stand on your head. It's a bad idea. But apart from standing on your head, almost any kind of posture where you feel at ease, you feel stable, you feel relaxed, you feel good about yourself, not too much pain, is great. You can even do lying down meditation, right? As long as you promise not to snore too loudly, you are fine. So you can do, and I know some monks who are, there's one monk particularly I know about, I met him quite recently, he's a very famous Thai monk, and many people say he's fully enlightened, right? That's really cool when you meet somebody, maybe fully enlightened, not 100% sure, but possibly. And he lies down when he meditates. And he says he gets really, really good meditation when he lies down. Why? Because he relaxes. Right? When you lie down, you really relax. Sometimes you relax a bit too much and you start snoring. But a lot of the time, if you are awake and your mindfulness is strong and things are going well, lying down actually is also a perfectly acceptable way of doing meditation practice. So you can try that while you're here if you want to, whether you do it in here or you do it upstairs in your room or whatever, it doesn't really matter. But the main principle here is that you find a sense of ease in the body. And this point's always one of the things that I have found which is really, fundamental, obviously, to the Buddha's teachings. And this is the very first teaching the Buddha gave after his awakening. And that is the teaching about the middle way. I'm sure you must have heard about the middle way. The Majjhima Patipada in the Pali language. And the middle way is a way whereby you don't torture your body, nor do you indulge the body. So, and the idea behind that is that if you indulge the body, it means you're finding happiness through the body. So if you indulge too much, it means that your mind goes out to the body to experience the happiness in the body. That's obviously bad. If you want to meditate, you want to withdraw your senses inwards, and you want to become peaceful inside, then if your mind always goes outside, it's a problem, right? But it also works the other way. If you have too much pain in the body, also the mind goes out to the body because there's a problem in the body that the mind wants to sort out. So either way, whether you go to the pain or you go to the indulgence side of things, there is a business to be done with the body as far as the mind is concerned. And as long as there is business in the body, it is very hard to withdraw inwards and to let go of the body completely and then go for the, for the internal happiness and the samadhi inside instead. So that is quite interesting, isn't it? That pain, as far as I'm concerned, is very clearly one extreme of the path, and then the indulgence is on the other side. So how do you know that you find that middle way? And what I usually say on a retreat like this, if you have any doubt about where the middle way is, always err on the side of indulgence. So if you have any doubts, always kind of, if you doubt anything, just indulge a little bit rather than having too much pain. That is much more important. Because if you do that, at least you won't have any pain, you won't have any problems, at least you'll enjoy yourself. Sometimes it can be very hard to know exactly where the middle path is. So make the mistake by indulging too much if you're going to make a mistake. Yeah. That's what I recommend. Of course, it's very limited how much you can indulge here anyway, because you're following the eight precepts, you're following kind of noble silence. Is that right? Noble silence, right? Eight precepts. So it's very limited anyway. So it's not as if you're going to go far astray by doing that, regardless. But at least it gives you some idea of, you know, where to go if you have any doubts about this this practice. That is the very first thing about, please, you know, make sure that you are comfortable and that you are enjoying yourself. There is no way that you're going to go into deep meditation if you have too much pain in the body here. The second thing which comes from that is the idea that once the body is kind of settled down and you feel at ease with that, the next thing is to not just not have any pain in the body, but to feel really relaxed and at ease. This is the second thing here. This is also can often take quite a while, especially if you're very busy in your ordinary life. Often people get a bit stressed and all these kind of things. Then it may take a while, to actually settle down and feel really relaxed and really at ease here. But it's worthwhile taking sufficient time to really relax and really enjoy yourself. Because if you do that, you find again, that you practice in the middle way, where you go away from the tensions and all these kind of things we're often tied up to the physical body. And as you do that, you kind of find that middle way again, and you enjoy being in the present moment. There's nothing quite as bad as being, you practice, meditation practice, and you feel tense, you can't really relax properly. It's terrible, and after a while, you just want to give up on meditation practice. You want to give up on Buddhism. You want to give up on everything, and you end up becoming a Christian or a Muslim or something instead. Right? This is really, really bad news. So I don't want that to happen. So I want you to kind of really enjoy what you're doing here. And the way to do this, to really relax and really find that ease, is actually, a large part of that is to be very patient with your practice. To just sit back and wait and allow things to kind of fall into place with, it often takes time. And as things fall into place, you start to feel that ease, you start to feel good about things. So patience is a very, very important part of this. And that patience often comes together with the idea that what you're doing now is really the core of what life is all about. And when you have that sense that this is really what it's all about, you become really patient with this because you are in the right place, you're doing the right thing. And then you sit back and you just wait. And as you wait, things tend to calm down and become nice all by themselves. It's kind of magical when that happens. And one way of doing this is to keep, to a large extent, keep your focus on the body. Because very often the tensions that we have in the mind, the problems that we have in the mind, they're often felt in the physical body. It's like if you feel upset about something, you can feel the tension in the body, or you are, stressed or whatever, all these things are often felt in the body. So by keeping attention on the body and by feeling the body, you can actually know what is happening in your mind. So keep that attention on the body for quite a while during this retreat. Every time you sit down, every time you kind of starting a new meditation session, go back to the beginning. Focus on the body. Make sure you are relaxed. Make sure you are at ease. And as you do that, as the body becomes really relaxed and at ease, you find the mind tends to follow along. And the reason is because mind and body are obviously so intimately connected to each other. So use the body as a kind of a mirror or a reflection or a barometer or whatever you want to call it to see whether your general well-being is okay, including the mind itself. And as you do that, things tend to kind of fall into place and things tend to become very peaceful. Be patient, be at ease, and things kind of fall into place. A very important aspect of this that is really required for this to work out is the attitude you have to your meditation practice. It's so important to have the right attitude. And that attitude should, of course, be one of being gentle, kind, having kind of a sense of softness inside, a sense of enjoying to be here. Wow, how fortunate I am to be in this beautiful place. Yeah, a peaceful, nice place, far away from the city and all these kind of things. What a wonderful thing this is. And get into that beautiful mindset where you really are enjoying yourself. You have a positive attitude to your fellow retreatants, right? You love everyone here. Yeah, this is kind of one of those important things. Yeah. And when you do that, you actually find that that is where meditation becomes possible. When you have the right attitude, your mind settles down, your body settles down, and everything becomes very, very nice. This is one of those things that is very important on this during this retreat. And I will give you some more hints how to actually get into that right attitude, because it is so fundamental for meditation to work out. So one of the ways, I'm going to say this in brief, but I don't really need to go into this in too much detail anyway, but one of the ways of looking at this is to see it from the viewpoint of the 8 precepts. So the first precept, of course, is the one about not killing living beings, and the opposite of that is to have kindness and compassion to living beings. One of the very interesting things about the Buddhist path, which I'm going to talk about later on as well, that when we talk about morality in Buddhism or Sila, it's not just about avoiding the bad things, but it's actually deliberately doing the good things. Yeah, so morality has two opposite aspects. And one of the things that is very important on a retreat like this is to kind of remember the positive side of the first precept, the idea of kindness and compassion for the people around you. And what that means, it's particularly important on a retreat like this, because many of you don't know each other, and it's very easy sometimes to get a little bit irritated and upset when you live in the same room and we live so closely together. So one of the very important things I really recommend you to do on this retreat is to have a sense of kindness and compassion for each other. To remember that everyone who is here is really kind of the top-notch people. Nobody would come on a retreat like this keeping the 8 precepts being silent unless they were really committed to the spiritual path, unless their heart was in the right place. Yeah, so this is the kind of the heart. The people who are here are kind of the absolute creme de la creme, right? This is the very top. So remember that, because when you remember the big picture, when you remember that everyone who is here, otherwise it would be crazy to come here to torture yourself for 9 days if you didn't really have some kind of spiritual aspirations. If you remember that, then you will always see the big picture in the person. You focus on that rather than seeing those tiny little mistakes that everybody does every now and again. So remember that, yeah, and have that sense of appreciation for being able to share 9 days with such incredibly well-meaning and well-intentioned individuals. It's a privilege to be able to do a retreat with people like this. And when you think like that, wow, I'm so privileged to be with these people, and you're lifting up your spirits and you have a very positive view of what is happening here. And this is one way of getting the attitude right, yeah? The second precept of these 8 precepts is about the idea of generosity. It's actually about not stealing. The opposite of not stealing is the idea of generosity. So be generous to each other, even in little ways, with how you think about each other, how you treat each other in daily life. Kindness and generosity are very closely related to each other. If ever you have a chance, an opportunity to be kind and generous to the people around you, the tiny little things, nothing really needs to be said, right? It's just that, it's just your attitude towards the people around you that matters. And one of the really fascinating things, that if you do acts of kindness, whether it is by being generous or it is by your attitude to the people around you, whatever it is, it often gives results immediately in your meditation afterwards. Because you have done something good now, then when you sit down, you feel good about yourself. The third precept is here, it is abstaining from all kinds of sexuality. And that, of course, is a very important one on the meditation retreat, because the idea here is to go inwards rather than going outwards. The idea of the sensual pleasures is always about going out into the world. Here, instead, we're finding happiness inside. But to be able to find happiness inside, you have to give up the happiness of the 5 senses, at least temporarily. And as you give that up, the mind is able to turn within and look for the spiritual happiness instead. This is a very important dichotomy in Buddhism, the idea between sensual pleasures on the one hand and the spiritual pleasures on the other. As long as you're seeking for happiness in the external world, yeah, as long as you're looking for things there, you will be attached to things in the external world. And as long as you are attached to things in the external world, it will be limited how far inside you're able to go, how far you're able to take a meditation inside. Yeah? So we have to, so that's why we kind of follow this precept. Not only this one, but also the idea of not, you know, using entertainment and all these kind of things. That is part of the same thing, the idea of letting go of some of the sensual pleasures. Yeah? So actually very important to understand this kind of, contrast between sensual pleasures on the one hand and the spiritual pleasures that you find in meditation practice on the other hand. Then there is the no lying, right? Very easy not to lie when there's noble silence, so that one should be straightforward. Don't make noble silence into something that is painful or difficult for you. Because if it feels painful or difficult, again, you're undermining your meditation practice. One very nice way of thinking about noble silence that I like it is the idea that if you are on a retreat like this, they guarantee that there will be people here who get some good meditation practice, right? And if any one of us speaks, we might disturb them. So think about noble silence as a gift that you give to the people around you to help them in the meditation, to help them enjoy this retreat for these 9 days. And as you think of it as a gift to everyone else, again, it becomes very beautiful, a very powerful way of looking at it. Then there is no drugs and alcohol, so I hope you don't have any kind of whiskey with you on the retreat, because then we're in trouble. Of course, the point there is to have clarity of mind and mindfulness. Then we have the Vikala boredom, not eating after midday. So sometimes people think, oh, I can't eat after midday, I've got to eat lots and lots and lots at lunchtime. But don't worry too much. Usually there is no problem. Usually people find it quite easy to keep that precept. Is there some chocolate or things in the evening? There is.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, great. So you can always, you know, if you don't get enough at the meal time, you can have a bit of chocolate and things in the evening. Yeah. And then there is the idea of not using entertainment and adorning the body and this sort of stuff. And which is actually one of the very nice things about going on a meditation retreat, not having to think about yourself so much, not having to think about what you look like, just wearing some loose, nice clothes where you feel comfortable and at ease, not worrying about yourself. In ordinary life, we have to think too much about how we appear to the world, you know, being the right, kind of looking right, all these kind of things. And when you go on a meditation retreat, it's really nice just to kind of disappear, not to think about all of those things. And when you disappear, you are also at the same time reducing your sense of self, reducing your sense of ego. That is also such a powerful and very useful thing as part of the meditation practice. As long as we have a sense of self, as long as we have a sense of ego, these things need to be supported by our thinking mind. We need to support, kind of, to think about ourselves in the right way, to protect ourselves, to defend ourselves if somebody criticizes us and all these kind of things. But now, we don't have to do that anymore. There's no defense. There's no nobody that you have to be. We don't have to be anyone. It kind of releases so much of that problem, that interrelationship problem that we have with all the people around us. That is also a very nice thing. You kind of wander around. You become nobody. You become kind of selfless. And it's very beautiful when you do that. And often it has a very powerful effect on the meditation practice as well. And the last one, of course, is the high-end luxurious beds. They're kind of covered already. The beds here are very, very nice and comfortable. So but I think that's perfectly fine. So that is just a short introduction about meditation practice. I'm going to kind of try to reinforce that every day by doing a guided meditation. So you're more than welcome to come to those if you like. But that is really all the meditation teaching I'm going to give. If you have any questions about meditation, please write them down on a piece of paper. Or you can also ask me during the interviews if you are interested in talking about that sort of thing. Okay, so that is enough for now. So I'm going to... I've already talked way too much. I always talk too much. It's terrible, isn't it? So now we're going to try to do some meditation together and just to kind of get started.
Maybe
Stefan,
if I can do it with
a
summary first.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to speak it?
Yeah. You want to do it now or something? Or do you want
to
after
the meditation?
Because
I don't know what to do.
Don't know what to do. Okay. That's true, actually. Okay, go for it. Yeah.
Okay, so dieses Motiv geht über das Wort des Buddha oder das Verhältnis zwischen dem, was der Buddha sagt und was er in den Sutras steht und der Meditation. Und es geht darum, dass sich das gegenseitig bestärkt und inspiriert. Also noch etwas, wie er selber, worauf er Wert legt, wenn er einen Motiv anleitet und wiederholt im Prinzip, was wir vorhin schon gehört haben, die drei wichtigen Punkte, ist das Frühstück oder Mittagessen und alles andere ist quasi freiwillig. Heute Abend gibt es eine kleine Einführung zur Meditation und alle weiteren Meditationsanleitungen werden dann in den geleiteten Meditationen gegeben. Und die wichtigste Idee ist die Achtsamkeit, um die es geht. Das ist die Voraussetzung für alle anderen Meditationspraktiken, die sonst so geübt werden, der Atem, Metta oder was auch immer. Und wenn die Achtsamkeit nicht gegeben ist, dann muss Gewalt und Willenskraft angewendet werden und das ist nicht hilfreich. Es gibt ein paar oder zwei wichtige Punkte, die aber eine Rolle spielen. Das eine ist, dass man sich wohlfühlt, dass man man innerlich froh ist. Und das zweite ist, dass man der Meditation den Vorrang einräumt. Das ist die Nummer eins, und dass nicht der Rest des Lebens oder die Meditation den Rest des Lebens unterstützen soll, sondern dass der Rest des Lebens eine Unterstützung für die Meditation darstellt, dass man sozusagen nicht viel umdreht. Da gibt es ein paar Punkte, die dazu hilfreich sind, um diese innere Haltung von innerer Freude zu fördern. Das ist einfach, dass man bequem sitzt, rein körperlich, und dass man sich am Mittelweg, den mittleren Weg orientiert, weder den Körper quält, noch in den sinnlichen Gemüten schwellt, sondern beide Extreme vermeidet, und damit geht der Geist eben nicht in den Körper, sowohl in das Schwelgen als auch in das Schmerzenempfinden. Das würde den Geist nach außen in die körperlichen Sinnesorgane ziehen, anstatt dahin, wo wir ihn haben wollen, nach innen. Dafür ist der mittlere Weg ganz wichtig. Und da gibt es dann noch als Beispiel, um das zu illustrieren, die acht Ethikregeln. Und die Betonung liegt darauf, dass man nicht nur die schlechten Sachen vermeidet, sondern dass man die guten Sachen tut. Zum Beispiel die erste Ethikregel, nicht töten, bedeutet im Grunde auf der Gegenseite, dass man Freundlichkeit und Mitgefühl entwickelt. Ebenso die zweite Ethikregel, nicht stehlen, besteht eben in Großzügigkeit. Und die Großzügigkeit kann auch darin bestehen, wie man über die anderen teilen, was man hier denkt und wie man sich betrachtet. Die dritte Ethikregel, kein Sex. Da geht es wieder darum, dass man eben die Aufmerksamkeit nicht auf die fünf äußeren Sinnesorgane richtet, sondern nach innen. Bei den Nicht-Lügen ist eben, wenn man viel ist und nicht redet, sowieso schwierig. Aber man soll sich damit auch nicht quälen, sondern man soll zum Beispiel die edle Stille als eine Gabe betrachten, die man den anderen gibt, um ihnen die Meditation zu ermöglichen. Der Gegenpol dazu, keine Drogen und kein Alkohol zu nehmen, ist die Achtsamkeit und der klare Geist. Und dass wir nicht nachmittags essen, da gibt es immer noch die Möglichkeit, dass wir keine erlaubten Sachen bekommen. Die siebte Ethikregel mit den Unterhaltungen und das Schmücken des Körpers, da geht es einfach darum, auch wieder die Sinne, die Aufmerksamkeit von den äußeren Sinnen weg nach innen zu richten und dass man sich auch nicht mit seinem mit sich selbst viel beschäftigt, wie man nach außen wirkt. Das kann man einfach mal zur Seite lassen. Und das sind 18 die Fetten und die sind hier genau richtig. Ich hoffe, das war halbwegs verständlich. Die in der hinteren Reihe. Ja?
Okay. Wow, that's pretty very efficient. Okay. This may be the chanting. I was letting you know about the chanting I was thinking of doing. Usually what I do on this retreat is the Karenia Metta Sutta at in the morning. You can accept the life note in the morning at 6 o'clock, 6 a.m. in the morning. And that's on page 17. What can David see? Page 17. And now you can do it in English. I hope you're okay with that. And then last thing before I in the evening, I usually do the homage to the triple gem, which is on page 22. And I usually do that in Pali at the very end. So Arahan, Samma, Sambuddha, Bhagava, Buddhan, Bhagavatam, Abhivadeni. Yeah, so that's all the chanting I normally do on this retreat. So. Good. Let's do some meditation together. Is it possible to have a little bit less lights in a bit? Yeah? Is that better?
Yeah. Okay, so what I recommend you to do is to fall into a nice routine every time you sit down to meditate. So you go through roughly the same kind of procedure. Sometimes you can go faster, sometimes more slowly. It's always good to start off just by feeling the body. Make sure that you are comfortable first of all. Find a nice posture for yourself. And if you feel a lot of pain during the meditation, I always recommend people to change the posture. Move your legs a little bit, or even get up and sit on a chair, whatever it takes to feel comfortable. And then, once the body is reasonably comfortable, the next thing is to find that ease, where you feel really relaxed and really nice inside. So make sure you take a lot of time, especially in the first day or two, just to find that ease. If you really relax and really flow through the day without any kind of problems. And again, to do that, one of the most important things is just to enjoy the present moment and to be very patient with yourself and allow things to calm down.
please be very careful not to go to the meditation object too soon. This is one of the main problems that people have in meditation. Take your time just to relax and be at ease. Make sure you stay with the body for a long time. Make sure you have that very gentle and kind observing of the body. And as you do that with patience, with the right attitude, you shall gradually, things become peaceful, things become nice. And that is where mindfulness has a chance to arise. And please just stay with the body for as long as it takes to feel really relaxed and really at ease. And the main thing at this stage is really just to be aware, but as passively aware as you possibly can. There's nothing that you really have to do apart from observing the sensations that are there. And when you observe those sensations, with a little bit of kindness, a little bit of compassion towards yourself, you find that things tend to calm down all by themselves. The idea here is to allow the meditation to be as easy and natural as you possibly can, with as little doing as you possibly are able to move towards. And as you do that, things tend to be natural, easy, comfortable, and joyful at the same time. of the great ways of thinking about meditation, that is to regard yourself as a passenger on a train. And when you are a passenger on a train, you have no control about the scenery outside. In exactly the same way, when you sit here now, you just allow things to be here. And you just watch in the same passive way, as if you are a passenger on the train. Sometimes all you do is just nudge your mind a little bit, nudge it towards compassion, gentleness and kindness. But most of the time you don't do anything at all. And you just allow the process of calming to happen all by itself. close to the end of the meditation. And before we end, I would like to ask you to reflect on what has happened over the past half an hour or so. And if you feel a bit more peaceful, a bit more relaxed than when you started, ask yourself why that is the case. What are the perceptions that you have developed? What are the things that you have let go of as part of this? And by understanding the process becomes more clear for future. That's it for tonight, so let's just finish off by doing the Arahanya, and afterwards just have a nice rest, have a nice sleep, and see you again tomorrow morning, whenever you are. If you like it, I'll be here by 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. So this is on page, 22, I can't see anything. 22, yeah.
Arahang Sammha Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavanta Abhivade Kato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namasami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang